We're starting off our 2018 position ranking series with the running backs, along with unveiling our top 10 backs in the NFL. We're talking about the wisdom of taking one high in the draft, the Jaguars' decision to build a 1992-style offense around Leonard Fournette, Alvin Kamara getting a bigger piece of the pie in New Orleans, and Christian McCaffrey's ability as a pure runner. It's all on the MMQB 10 Things podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB 10 Things podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. We have arrived at our annual position rankings shows, starting with the running backs today. And if you've listened to the show in the past, we're doing it a little bit different this year. In past, we had our rankings. We'd go down the rankings. We'd have a discussion about each guy in the rankings. And then we would go on and live our lives once we were done. We're going to do it a little bit differently because it started to become a little bit redundant. We're obviously talking about a lot of the same things with the same guys every year because a lot of the same guys are on the list every year. So the way we're going to do it this year, we're going to have sort of a five-question topic start to it. Then we will unveil the rankings and have a shorter discussion of the rankings, and then we'll have a lightning round at the end, which, of course, will take 40 minutes just like Andy always loves.
Yeah, I do. I love the promptness of it all. We'll get through, and it's running backs. That's a fun position because it's an evolving position, and it's one that people know. Even casual fans know all the running backs because these guys, for whatever reason, still get drafted pretty high in fantasy football, which would suggest the scoring systems are out of whack, by the way, but this is not a fantasy show.
It's not, and I've actually written quite a bit about the problem with running backs in fantasy. It's a much tougher problem to solve than you might think because it's about separation among the statistics, and you don't get that at other positions the way you do at running back, and that's why it's tough to crack that nut. But let's dive into it, and we're gonna start with a topic here. Saquon Barkley is kind of the jumping-off point, but the last couple years we had that drought of first-round running backs, and now we're back to not only first-round running backs, we're seeing running backs taken high in the first round. Andy, obviously, the cliche is sort of, oh, running backs, you can find them anywhere, get them late in the draft, get them in priority free agency. They're pretty replaceable guys. In your mind, Is it a smart move to invest a high pick in a Saquon Barkley or a Leonard Fournette?
If you'd asked me that a couple of years ago, I would have said, no, I don't think so. And especially, this is the pre-Ezekiel Elliott Andy Benoit talking here. I would have said, mm-hmm. I don't think so, especially if you've got the right offensive line. But having watched Elliott in Dallas, even with that tremendous O-line, and seeing what he means to them, and then as he gets better in the passing game, and just take that theory and think of these guys that contribute as receiving backs and everything that means, Alvin Kamara for the Saints, who I know was a third-round pick, but we're talking guys that bring a dimension to the offense. I've reevaluated my opinion, and I don't believe you just can get one. I mean, you can get one in the middle rounds, but I don't think that's any kind of strategy. If there's one you like at the front of the draft, the case in point, the Giants with Saquon Barkley this year, I loved that they took Barkley. So I have expanded my thinking on running backs. Where are you on this one?
The thing that gives me pause is just the shelf life. And look, Barkley's a little bit of a unique case because obviously you had quarterbacks at the top of the draft. Could you conceivably have gotten a quarterback who will be on your roster for 15 years as opposed to Barkley, who might be half that time as far as being an elite player? And I think that plays into it. I think longevity is something that has to be considered. The other thing with Barkley to me, and obviously this will be a theme that pops up quite a bit during the show, is it's always the headline, blank is the best running back since Adrian Peterson. It was still coming out this year. Saquon Barkley is the best running back coming in the draft since Adrian Peterson.
Right.
Adrian Peterson was a different kind of player than Saquon Barkley. Maybe you see some similarities with Leonard Fournette, but Saquon Barkley is a guy who will upgrade your passing game. That's not what Adrian Peterson was. So, and we'll talk about Leonard Fournette in a moment more in depth, but a guy like Barkley, I mean, that's the new prototype, the Le'Veon Bell, the Joe Mixon to a lesser extent, and now Barkley. And I think when you're looking at a talent like that, and again, you're saying, you know, maybe this guy's only a top player we hope for 7 or 8 years, which is obviously a pretty good window of time, but it's not a quarterback window of time. That's, to me, a guy like Barkley is worth that investment in the top 10.
Well, and Adrian Peterson is a good example of how this conversation can get complicated. Remember, he, coming out of Oklahoma, was injury prone. He had all kinds of injuries in Oklahoma. He's a battering ram running back with injury issues, and he doesn't do anything in your passing game.
Yeah.
Why would you take a guy like that? Even though it was 10 years ago, the NFL was still evolving into a passing league at that point, and you could have argued back then, why would you take a guy like that early in the draft? Well, every team that played with Adrian Peterson, except for the ones in recent years, I guess every Vikings team, every installment of them that we saw, I think they'd tell you we're pretty happy having Adrian Peterson be the guy our offense was built around. And the year he tore his ACL and then came back, he had his best season ever. So the injury-prone guy got better when he got hurt in the NFL. So how do you know any of this applies directly? Now, what's hard is Adrian Peterson, in theory, a runner like that, if the play is done correctly, he's going to get 3 to 4 yards as it is. So how much more beyond 3 or 4 can you get? What's the value above replacement, so to speak? And that's what you have to look at with these power type running backs, the guys that have no intangibles in the passing game. Then you have to look at, well, how many more rushing yards are they actually getting for us than what the line and a typical running back would be getting for us by design.
Well, let's transition to the next part of the conversation here. Leonard Fournette, he's a different kind of back than Saquon Barkley. They might have some similarities as runners, as big backs, the way you're going to use them. But Fournette doesn't have the same value in the passing game. On top of that, you mentioned this last season. The Jaguars are like the only team in the league who actually run through the A-gaps, which is, I mean, this is turn back the clock 20 years type of stuff.
Yeah, most teams run through the B and the C gaps. I mean, that's largely because of the prominence of zone running in the NFL, and just you don't see a lot of straight north-south runs. And Jacksonville did have a lot of those, and almost all of them went to Fournette. He's a hard one, Gary, because I think he's the best run finisher in the NFL. The question is, how much does that really matter? There are old-school coaches that'll tell you, oh, yeah, attitude football, that's what it's all about. Well, when you finish a run tremendously, you gain maybe an extra 1 or 2 yards. And yes, that adds up. And yes, it matters more than nothing. But it's in the scheme of things, it doesn't flip field position. It doesn't change the way you play or the way your opponent has to play in terms of approaching the game. It's just little, it's almost just tiny bonuses here, and here. So would take that advantage of a Leonard Fournette who gets you a few extra yards every snap, which is admirable, but then compare it to the advantage of we're probably going to go back to him a lot because he's such a prototype, of an Alvin Kamara, who, and the advantage he gives you by just splitting out wide and what that means for everything you do, and does it create one-on-one matchups for wide receivers in the passing game? Because often it does. And does it give Drew Brees a lot of information about the coverage and reveal a lot for him? It's hard to say. The Fournette, he's a great football player, but how much value is his style of football really presenting? You could argue not a lot.
Well, from a strategy standpoint, and let's specifically talk Fournette here for a little bit, and what the Jaguars do. Obviously, the Jaguars have a question mark at quarterback, and it might be a question mark that does not become an answer anytime in the next couple of years. They, you know, maybe Bortles takes the next step this year, but maybe they're looking for a new quarterback next year, and then you sort of have this foundation now that you can lean on. Does Fournette take something away, or does Fournette basically give you an answer, like a fallback plan, for not only if your quarterback struggles, if your quarterback gets hurt, now you have something to fall back on with the power run game? And on top of that, does the fact that he is a threat, because, you know, like you said, there's the sort of cold, hard, statistical look at Leonard Fournette as a run finisher gets you 1 or 2 extra yards per carry. What's that worth? Defenses gear up for it, though. I mean, defenses worry about that, even if maybe they worry about it too much from just a cold, hard, statistical standpoint.
They do, but So what? I mean, what are they going to do with it? Because they're going to worry about the run no matter what. Play action, very rarely, and it's not. It does happen, but very rarely does a defender sell out against play action because he's afraid of who the running back is. More often than not, he's selling out because of the situation, because of the offensive line and how well they sell it. Remember, a D line or a linebacker or any defensive player, they're reading the lineman as much as they're reading the running back, and a lot of times they're reading the lineman first. So the idea that play action, well, the better your run game, the better your running back, the better your play action. That is true, but to such a limited extent that it's not a kind of conversation that you would have very much when you're actually scheming this stuff. Some of the best play-action teams in football have not necessarily been some of the best running teams. The Washington Redskins are a great illustration. They were tremendous again last year on play-action. Their running game was one of the worst in the NFL.
Yeah.
So play-action is about offensive continuity as much as anything. But look, Gary, if you're Jacksonville and you know what your quarterback is and he's limited, and you're going to have to play around that, and you're a defensive team, and you're comfortable winning games 13-9 and that kind of thing, then a Leonard Fournette can be very valuable to you because he does control the flow of the game. And you could even argue he controls it as much as Alvin Kamara controls the flow of the game. Kamara is just controlling a different game. It's a different style of play, but that's what the Saints can do because they have Drew Brees. So how well does the running back fit your identity in your style of play? And maybe that's really how we need to evaluate these guys. But it gets to the question, if you had a clean slate, let's say you can make any kind of offense you want. I don't think there's a coach in the league that would say, give me Leonard Fournette before they'd say, give me Alvin Kamara stylistically.
Yeah. Let's talk about Kamara here. Obviously a bit of a news peg to this. Mark Ingram will start the year on a 4-game suspension. The second half of last year, they had sort of flipped that timeshare. It had been maybe 55-60% Ingram and then 40-45% Kamara. Second half of the season, it flipped, and Kamara was taking a slight majority of the snaps. But it looks like early on, this is going to have to be like Alvin Kamara on the field for 80-85% of their snaps. And again, they might make a move. They might add a veteran back. They said they won't, but that seems, I don't know, like not the thing to do here. Considering
right.
how cheap you can get a veteran big back. But is Alvin Kamara, in your mind, is he a guy? I think it's fair to say you're going to lose effectiveness somewhat on like a per-play basis if you're Alvin Kamara, if you're getting 5 to 8 more touches in a game. There's just a fatigue factor that will add up over the course of a period of time. But Kamara for 80% of a game, is this something that they should be doing full-time? Let me pose it this way. Should they just have Alvin Kamara on the field even when Ingram is back in like an 80-20 split because they're so much more multidimensional with Kamara on the field?
Probably, yes, if they were a different team, but that's not the way Sean Payton has played. For one, he's always had a running back rotation back to the Pierre Thomas days and the Reggie Bush days. So he values different running back personnel. The other reason is they play so many different personnel packages that if you felt you had one single back, you had to, especially a running back, not even a number one receiver, but a running back that you had to keep in full time, that will limit your personnel packages at some point. So Kamara, he only played 45% of the snaps last year. That wasn't about keeping him fresh. It was that a little, but it was also about that's just the nature of the Saints offense. They've got a lot of guys that rotate in. For years, they had about 8 or 9 guys every season who would have 500 yards of offense from scrimmage. They just are, they passed the ball around. They were a basketball team. Everyone would average 12 to 15 points a game in their offense. So that's the way they're set up to play. And this idea that, well, now Kamara's got to shoulder a heavier load in September, I'd be surprised if it goes that way because of what we just said. And changing your entire plan and at that, yes, you're risking Kamara when you do that too. His body at the pro level has been conditioned so far for 45% of the snaps. To come out early in the season when injury is a greater risk anyway because everyone's already adjusting physically, to do that and then add double his snaps, put him up to 80-85% and change the face of your offense, I don't see them doing that. I see them either signing a veteran back or going with one of these no-name backup young guys like Daniel Lasko is a name I've just learned this week. Their 7th-round pick of 2 years ago. Boston Scott, which is a really cool name, sixth-round pick this year. They're a rookie. I could see just those guys get the carries and play the Mark Ingram role.
Yeah, yeah. Boston Scott, and yes, that is a great game. The dude's 5'6". I don't know what kind of role they had in mind for him. I just figured it would be like return specialist. Lasko is probably a guy who, at least in terms of body type, would be more reminiscent of what you have in Mark Ingram. But I guess we'll find out. Just real quick, Kamara, take the – and obviously so much of Kamara's value is tied to his receiving skills. But just purely as a runner, I mean, he's a guy who he didn't have more than 12 carries in a game last year. What do they do with him as a runner, and sort of what's his pure value at, just as a sort of a traditional running back?
Well, he does not look fast on film, but then when you watch the defense against him, the entire defense looks slow. He's got a deceptive speed, and it's an effortless speed. And he is very fast. He just doesn't exert a whole lot, so it's hard to notice almost. They like to get him the ball, and this is also in the passing game especially, but they like to get him the ball in as many different ways as they can early in the game. You'll notice a lot of times he'll have 4, maybe 5 touches on the opening drive alone. All the ways we feed Kamara, let's see how the defense responds, and let's make the defense have to think about all those things as we play the rest of the game. I think getting him, to answer the question directly, Gary, with how do they get him going in the running game, getting him on the perimeter by design is a good one. It gives him a little more room for creativity. I think that deceptive speed becomes a factor. But in my opinion, the Saints have always been best when their inside running game is rolling, and they're big linemen, and they've always prioritized big linemen. When you get guys hitting it up behind double teams and getting downhill and getting 6 or 7 yards between the tackles, that's why I like Mark Ingram so much. I think he's very good on those runs. I'll be interested to see how Kamara does on that. You've got to give him a few of those every game because you need to have a diverse running game when he's in there.
And we'll move on to another guy here. It's going to be a similar type of conversation. Christian McCaffrey. Now, the Panthers just added C.J. Anderson this week, so McCaffrey is not going to have the expanded role maybe that that some expected him to have, though I'd expect he'd have more of a role in the running game this year. He only had 123 carries, even if you include the playoff game they played in last year. My question about McCaffrey, this was the conversation we had about McCaffrey, or really everyone had about McCaffrey last summer. We know what he is in the passing game. We know how dangerous he is as a receiver, as a matchup piece. The Panthers had sort of implied, you know, this is a guy who ran a lot of power at Stanford. He's a Stanford back. I mean, he's not from one of these, sort of spread offense, sort of, I guess there's more spread in the NFL, but I was calling it, you know, sort of the Mickey Mouse spread offenses there in college football, where you just run through giant lineman splits and giant running lanes and all that. But McCaffrey's a guy who ran power at Stanford. He wasn't used that much as a runner last year, and he wasn't terribly effective as a runner last year. When you watched him, again, just as a runner now, was it something of a disappointment? Did you see flashes? Do you think it's something that's going to drastically improve over the next 4 or 5 years here?
Yeah, I think it should improve. I think it will improve. His numbers at Stanford, and this was like a Pro Football Focus. I have a philosophical difference with them on grading and how do you grade and can you grade a player? And that's just a matter of philosophy. They had some excellent stats that don't get into grading that are just, hey, here's the football play. And McCaffrey's numbers on power versus other runs, according to them, when he was at Stanford, he was a much better runner on power. And that is great information. I think his style of running really fits power. And when we say power, I mean, in the simplest terms, just think pull blockers. There's different variations of it, but a pulling guard and you're running behind the pulling guard. McCaffrey has a wiggle and a patience to his running that is conducive to setting up your blocks when your blockers are on the move. You've got to manipulate defenders when you're running behind a blocker. You have to make the defender get in the blocker's line and help your guy out. You can't expect the blocker to always go reach the defender. You got to set up the defender. I think McCaffrey has a chance to do that very well. They did not have a running game rhythm with him last year, but they didn't have one at all in Carolina. Their running game, sometimes, Gary's teams are just so bad at something that you almost evaluate their personnel when doing it with a grain of salt. Like, well, Carolina, McCaffrey didn't run well, but Nobody in Carolina's run the ball well. It's been a bad running game for a number of reasons all year. Yeah, that doesn't change McCaffrey's skill set. Now, if it happens again this season, maybe we expand the conversation. But I think with Anderson aboard, Norv Turner, who's always done well with running backs in his system, and as long as they keep building their designs around the threat of Cam Newton running, I think even with Andrew Norwell, their best run blocker, gone now, I think they'll be a much better running team this season.
Okay. What did you think before they added Anderson, which obviously changes the conversation a little bit, but were you sort of comfortable looking at them and seeing McCaffrey as a guy who maybe even doubles what he got from a rushing standpoint last year? You know, let's say he was 117 in the regular season as a 220, 230 carries per year type of guy. Do you think that fits what he is, or do you start factoring in? I mean, he's a guy who came in with some durability concerns coming out of Stanford, and he's not a small back. I mean, I think he's like 205, 210, something like that, but he's not a big back either.
Yeah, that's hard. He's certainly not a big back, and he doesn't play. I'm trying to think if he plays small or not. I don't. Like C.J. Anderson's a great example. He's not a big back, but he plays big. I don't feel uncomfortable when I watch C.J. Anderson's body ram up into a pile of men. I maybe would be with McCaffrey a little bit. He's not an authoritative, delivering the strength kind of runner. He's not a pure elusive runner either, though. He can take contact. I don't know if he delivers contact. So if I have him on the field, and I think this whole thing on touches and handoff numbers, I think we tend to get it overblown too. To me, it comes down to touches. How do you get the ball in his hand? And if he's getting 7 catches a game and 10 carries a game, let's just say at 17 touches, in my mind, that's almost better than getting 15 carries a game and 4 touches through the air, even though that'd be 19 touches. It's the way you're using him and how you're getting the ball to him as much as anything.
Well, a guy who's going to run a lot of power, and again, we've talked about this before, it's called power. It's not necessarily, overly violent. But does it take a bigger toll? You know, running in a system like Carolina's as opposed to maybe a place where you're going to be on the perimeter a little bit more?
Yeah, probably does, because on the perimeter, chances are you're getting tackled by a corner or a safety, which means you're just getting to the ground. A linebacker or a strong safety hitting you, now you're getting hit on the way to the ground.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it probably does change that a little bit.
Last question of the opening segment here, Andy. This is very vague, but this is sort of Andy's corner here. What is your favorite, let's say, what are your favorite schematic uses of running backs? Basically, who uses their running backs the best, and are there any emerging trends that you want to pinpoint heading into 2018?
Anytime a running back, I like it when teams and players fit the team's person or fit the team's identity. So, like I just said a few seconds ago, I wouldn't take Leonard Fournette over Kamara if I'm building an offense from scratch. But if I'm running Jacksonville's offense, I want Fournette over Kamara, and I love and admire the way Fournette fits. And there's no one right and one wrong offense. There's a bunch of different variations in the NFL. So that's why I'm a big fan of having your personnel marry your identity and really shaping those two things together. So anytime the running back fits what they do tactically, like Todd Gurley for the Rams has fit. He fits their style of run game. He's a little bit of a stiff runner, but it's okay because they run zone. They don't run gap scheme, so he doesn't need to necessarily wiggle and set up his blocks the same way. The one cut stuff and go, that's just fine. And then Gurley is so good once he gets rolling downhill, they find ways to get him that in the passing game and the screen game. That's a good example of a team playing to the running back strengths. Another great example, and it's easy to name these super talented backs, but we're trying to paint a picture for people, is Le'Veon Bell. And what do they do in Pittsburgh? They run behind double team blocks a lot, inside zone or duo, as some people call it. There's different variations, but suffice to say, Le'Veon gets the ball. He has two guys blocking for him in front of him, a couple of double teams. Well, double team blocks take a little bit longer to unfold if you want them to, and the longer you let them unfold, the more powerful they become because it's two on one. Two blockers eventually will always wear down one defensive lineman. So you get a patient runner like Le'Veon Bell, and those double team blocks become even more potent because he lets them have time to unfold. I love that kind of thing. And Bell, by the way, is also very good on counter, which is a misdirection form of power. In Pittsburgh, they use it with David DeCastro. It takes a little bit longer to unfold. But again, we're playing to Bell's patience. Guys like that, I think those teams do a really good job. And maybe it's easy to do a good job. I just named some of the most talented running backs in the NFL.
All right, Andy, we are literally 1 minute away from unveiling the top 10 running backs in the NFL heading into 2018 based on our vote. But first, you know, this time of year brings two things, graduations and Father's Day, and of course, the gifts that go along with them. Before you buy dad another tie or that grad a balloon that's probably just going to float away, ask yourself this: does my dad or grad like wings or sports or better yet, both? If the answer is yes, then get them a Buffalo Wild Wings gift card. Right now, if you purchase $30 worth or more in-store or online, they'll give you a $5 bonus to keep for yourself. Now that's a gift that gives back. How generous of you. Buffalo Wild Wings, wings, beer, sports. Terms and conditions apply. All right, Andy, the top 10 running backs in the NFL. If you've listened to the show in past years, you probably know how we do this. If you're new, well, this is how we do it. It's actually pretty basic. Andy Benoit, myself, and one of our researchers, this week it is Reed Foster, providing his rankings. We each ranked our top 15 running backs in the NFL. Andy's vote counts as double, and then the way we rank it, it's AP poll style. If you get a first-place vote, you get 15 points, and Andy's case it would be 30 points, second place 14 points, down to if you got a 15 place vote, that is 1 point. Add them together, you get our rankings. I'm just gonna jump into it. We'll start with the others receiving votes, and I had three names I wanted to throw out and just get your quick thoughts on, Andy. But if anyone stands out to you here in others receiving votes, let me know. So this would start with number 11, and I'll read down them, and if you can crack the code, you can figure out specifically where each running back was ranked. So other receiving votes, we got Mark Ingram, Leonard Fournette, Joe Mixon, Kareem Hunt, Melvin Gordon, Christian McCaffrey, Carlos Hyde, Jay Ajayi, Dalvin Cook, and Sony Michel. The two guys, to me, I had Joe Mixon ranked quite high. I think Joe Mixon was a victim of football's worst blocking offensive line last year. I think Mixon is a stud, and hopefully they get that straightened out with the Bengals. Kareem Hunt's the guy I want to ask about, though, because obviously Kareem Hunt is a guy who just won a rushing title as a rookie, and we all had him ranked relatively low, obviously, when you consider the top of his resume. In your mind, what is Kareem Hunt at this point? Is he a foundational back, or is he kind of a product of not only the system they have in Kansas City, but the fact that they have just, you know, you got Travis Kelce, you got Tyreek Hill, and now you're adding Sammy Watkins there, you're going to have Patrick Mahomes probably doing, naturally making that passing game a little more expansive. But what's Hunt at this point?
I wouldn't call Hunt a product of the system, but I'd call him a piece of the system. And he's a professional sound runner. He does it exactly how you want it to be, and he draws it up how you draw it up. He does it well, and he can contribute in the passing game. So if somebody has an issue with us ranking him low, I had him, what did I have him, number 12. I had him number 12. I had your boy Joe Mixon at 13. I'm with you on Mixon. I think Mixon needs to be a little bit more refined, and that will come with better blocking and more experience. Mm-hmm. But skill set wise, talent wise, Joe Mixon's as good as almost anyone in the league. He goes left and right very well. He runs light on his feet. He gets stronger and lower as contact approaches. I think he's a tremendous player, potentially. He's got to put it together, but the ability is there. Hunt is almost not the antithesis of Mixon, but he's a more finished product with less natural ability.
All right. And how about Dalvin Cook? Obviously, it was a... it was a truncated season for him. He goes down with the ACL in week 4. What did you see from Cook last year? And basically, is he a guy who we might be talking about in the sort of, you know, the sort of top, let's say top five backs in the NFL? Does he have that kind of ceiling?
Potentially. He's very good. I thought he was great getting on the, when they got him on the perimeter by design. I'm sure he can get himself on the perimeter too and bounce the carry. But pitches and sweeps and tosses and stretch handoffs, I thought he looked sensational at that. Now, he went down in week four, so he really only played three full games. And I thought in two of those games, Minnesota early in the season didn't do enough to highlight him as a perimeter runner. So what I've seen of Cook and what I love, it's a small sample size. I basically loved how he looked in that Monday night opener against the Saints. So I don't know about him because we haven't seen a whole lot, but I remember sometimes you put on the film, and it's a, in my case, because I try to not look too much at these guys before they get to the NFL, maybe a little bit, but I don't want to see them until they become pros. Once in a while, you go, oh, I get it now. I see why everyone's been talking about him. And it's instant. You either see it right away or you don't, usually. I had that with Ezekiel Elliott. I had that with Dalvin Cook last year. I got it. I understood the hype as soon as I saw him.
Okay. Anyone else in that others receiving vote blow your mind in any way?
Blow my mind. Name like the three or four guys. Fournette didn't make our top 10?
No, Fournette was 12. So it was Ingram, Fournette, yeah. Mixon, Hunt, Melvin Gordon, McCaffrey, Carlos Hyde, Ajayi, Dalvin Cook, Sony Michel. I know you love him.
Sony Michel blows. Yeah, Michel blows my mind, but that's because we let Reed Foster in on the voting this year, and that's what he did to us.
That's the Jeff Irwin Memorial. Jeff Irwin didn't die, by the way. But
no, he moved on to better things.
Moved on to a better job than hanging out with us. But that's a Jeff Irwin moment.
Yeah, I had Ingram top 10, but I'm not going to throw a fit. I had him number 9, so I'm not going to throw a fit that he's not in there.
Well, let's unveil the top 10 here, and we'll do it one by one. And Andy, if you have any commentary, you can stop me as we go. But number 10, that's Saquon Barkley. And look, you never, you've never ranked a rookie in one of these things. This will be the third year we've done it. You watched him fairly extensively, though, and you were giddy about him.
No, I didn't. I saw the Iowa game. Yeah, but I thought the Iowa game was so off the charts impressive, I thought, I don't think I need to ever see another carry this guy takes again. Just put him in the NFL. I can't wait to see him then. So I got mad at you a few years ago because you put Ezekiel Elliott on the list, which ruined our running back show because he hadn't played in the NFL. I'm not as mad about this one. I didn't put Barkley in because, honestly, I didn't even think about it because he's never been in the pros. But I'm not going to throw a fit about Barkley being in there because my man crush on him is overwhelming.
Okay. Yeah, just take that Iowa game and project it over 120 NFL games. And that's,
is that how that works? Project it over 10 games and it'll go to Canton on the first ballot. That was an incredible running. And what it is, by the way, so people know why, it wasn't just how he got a lot of yards, but he did. But the way he got them, and this is a big trait for running backs. And if you don't have this in the NFL, you're not going to be any more than a decent system back at best. And the trait is the ability to move left and right and confine areas. Can you go laterally? And what makes the guys who are special really special is, can you go laterally while still matriculating downhill? Mm-hmm. And Barkley is as good as anyone I've ever seen. He'll go laterally without going only laterally. It's unbelievable because he also maintains his strength and his balance. That's the other thing that gets overlooked is balance. That when you're an aging running back, the very first thing you lose in your skill set, it's not your speed or your quickness, it's your balance. So, and that's how you set up your blocks. That's how you set up your moves. If you don't have balance, you don't have any agility. You don't have any make you miss ability. Barkley's lateral movement mixed with his strength and his balance, all in confined areas. You have to be able to run with bodies around you because the bodies are all there. You're running the ball up the middle in the NFL. That's what makes Barkley so special. I think he's going to be a big, big time player. And to take out the receiving skill set, I still would have been comfortable with him as the number 2 pick. Add in the receiving skill set, and
really?
I love him as the number. Yeah, I think he's the best runner I've ever seen from just as a guy running the ball in college. I don't know what he'll be in the pros, but he can run in college. He ran well.
All right. Number 9 was Tevin Coleman. Always interesting. Tevin Coleman always makes our our list here. And obviously, he's usually the only number two back who actually makes our list. But yeah, they might have a decision to make on him after this year because he is a free agent and they're already paying Devontae Freeman.
I know. Isn't that surprising?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you have a – well, let me ask you this about Coleman just real quick. You I think, each of the last 2 years ranked Coleman ahead of Freeman. I had him the other way. I have them both ranked on my list. But they don't – they never made the move to play Tevin Coleman more than they play Devontae Freeman, even between Coleman's various, you know, dinged up injuries type of thing. So I guess my question is, Andy, are you ready to give up on that?
No, I think the reason Freeman plays more is because he is the better pure zone runner, and that is what Atlanta's first and second down running game is about, is pure outside zone. And Freeman's another one I could have mentioned in our who's the best scheme fit in the league. Freeman on outside zone runs is about as good as anyone. So his style and his strength perfectly fits what Atlanta wants to do on first and second down, and you just get more first and second down snaps in the NFL. It's just the math of the game. So I don't think – I believe, Gary, there are meaningful people on that coaching staff. In fact, I'm not going to say I believe. I know this. There are meaningful people on that coaching staff over the years who have felt Coleman's the guy they can do more with, and he's the more valuable player. That doesn't mean anyone in Atlanta isn't totally sold and totally high on Devontae Freeman, though.
Yeah, yeah. Number eight is Jordan Howard. Just real quick on Jordan Howard. I mean, you got Matt Nagy coming up from Kansas City. They always like to use those multidimensional backs in Kansas City. Does Howard fit that? Is Howard going to be a good fit in the scheme, or are they going to have to figure out something else with maybe a little more Tariq Cohen on early downs there?
There'll be more Cohen. Howard's another really good outside runner. He might be the second best outside zone runner in the NFL. He is a little bit more limited in that. He's a power outside zone runner. Freeman's an agile one. But Howard, you can't do as many different things, and he's not very good in the passing game. So Cohen will be on the field, but he'll be on the field with Howard, which will present some complications as far as how do we match up. It's one thing to have two running backs on the field. It's another to have a dynamic scat back with a true bruising running back, and what do you do about that? They played those guys on the field together last year. A lot of teams played nickel against it, treating Cohen as a pure wide receiver. I'm sure Matt Nagy will notice that, and he'll build in some run designs to act accordingly. But Cohen's going to be the Tyreek Hill / DeAnthony Thomas in this offense. And Howard, he's a good enough runner that you'll still build your running game around him. They'll fit the offense to him appropriately.
Seven is LeSean McCoy. Have you seen any decline in his game? He'll be 30. He'll be 30 sometime soon.
Yeah, he will. I don't think I have. I don't. If I wasn't looking for it, I don't think I'd notice it. There might be something here or there. We said balance is the first thing to go when you're a back. He'll be really interesting to see, because when he does decline, I could see him declining very quickly because balance is such a big part of his style of running. But so far, I haven't seen it. I think he's every bit as dangerous as he used to be.
Yeah, I mean, he had what, 346 plus 25 more. Yeah, he had like 371 touches last year, which is pretty absurd He'll be 30 in July. Number six, Devontae Freeman, who we just talked about a little bit. Best outside zone runner. Anything you want to add on Freeman?
No, I think we're good. Pass protection, he could sharpen that a little bit. I think we all saw the Super Bowl. But hey, let's let the guy move on too after a while, huh?
Yes. Number five, Alvin Kamara, who we talked about plenty at the top of the show, which brings us to the top four. And I think it's safe to say there's sort of a clear-cut top four at this point, and I don't know if we're really fired up one way or another about how they order them. You and I ordered them in the complete opposite way. Your 1-4 was my 4-1. But the way we ended up, before we factored Reed in here, we had a four-way tie for first place, so it's a good thing we added Reed's voice.
Reed Foster, the new guy, just totally controlled the vote at the top of this thing.
He did. Yes, he did.
How did he do it? Let's see how I haven't actually seen. You didn't send me this list, so I'm getting this revealed to me as we go. You sent me everybody's list, but I'm not going to add it up myself and figure it out.
You had to do the work. You had to do the math. Todd Gurley is 4. David Johnson 3. Le'Veon Bell 2 and Ezekiel Elliott 1. Bell and Elliott were actually tied at the top, but I'm not only giving you double vote, but I'm giving you tiebreaker. I'm making the Andy Bell tiebreaker.
Good. Thank you. I've earned that. Yeah. I want every vote in my life to count the way the votes in this poll count.
I actually want to talk about David Johnson real quick. I was a coward. I originally had David Johnson at one, and I said, you know what, coming off the wrist injury, you didn't play enough last year. I'll bump down to four to make Andy Benoit happy, and then I get Andy's list, and Andy has David Johnson one.
Well, here's why. Because I think Johnson and Bell, you can do more with them than you can with Ezekiel Elliott at this point. I'm not sure Elliott isn't the best. Well, let me just keep talking. So I think you can do more with – I think they're more diverse runners than Elliott. Elliott might be the most dynamic runner once the ball – he's the most dynamic downhill runner, we'll put it that way. But as all-around runners go, I think Bell and Johnson are in their own class. I've had Bell ahead of Johnson for a while, and I know Johnson sat out, but I'm not worried about a wrist injury. All that means to me is he got to save his legs in a year that was a lost season for Arizona anyway. I think Bell – Bell didn't have a lot of huge home run plays last year, and I factored that in a little bit. Maybe that's not fair. He didn't have a single carry that went over 30 yards, though, Gary. He was not a home run hitter, and I just wonder what that means. I didn't feel like he was slowing down at all on film, but I zero big plays got my attention, so I moved Johnson ahead of Bell for that reason. It was more a demotion of Bell than a promotion of Johnson. But again, we're talking – I had these guys 1 and 2, I believe. So it's not like I think that neither of them – either guy could be MVP this year, and it wouldn't shock me.
Yeah. And let me – before we move on to the lightning-ish round, let me just ask you about Ezekiel Elliott really, really quick. Cowboys have this complete lack of weapons in the passing game now. No Dez Bryant, no Jason Witten. They didn't really get anyone to replace either of those guys, at least in the short term. Is Elliott ready for an expanded role as a receiver? And can you do anything? Is he a guy who maybe you can move around a little bit, split out, or is he just a guy who you're going to run? You know, you're going to line him up behind Dak Prescott and just do it that way.
I think you can move him around. I think he's probably better catching passes out of the backfield than he would be into the slot or out wide, but I think you could use him that way a little bit. It would be a changeup, though. It would not become a defining trait of their offense. They've got to figure out a way to adjust now that they don't have any weapons in the passing game. It's going to be harder on Dak Prescott, and one thing I think that will be important, because obviously Elliott takes on greater significance now. They need him to get 20 carries, 115 yards every week to have a chance offensively. I think using Prescott's legs in the passing game, so bootlegs, play action, rollouts, stuff they've already been doing for a long time, I think really emphasizing that and calling it at the right moments, they need to do something to influence defenders on the perimeter so that those defenders, defensive ends, corners, unblocked safeties, those guys, they cannot let them just start teeing off and running at Elliott and selling out against the run. They've got to do something to hold the perimeter defenders and give Elliott a chance to operate inside. And if you do that, that old line's going to get some yards for you just by itself anyway. So using Prescott's legs to offset the deficiency at wideout is going to be a big deal in Dallas.
All right. Andy, it is time for the lightning-ish round. And you know what that means? Only 45 minutes left in the show.
Yeah. Lightning round.
Let's start it off here. We got like 6 questions. It won't take that long. Who will be the best running back in the league in 5 years?
5 years? Saquon Barkley. 5 years. Okay. I mean, 5 years, though? These guys could all be dead in 5 years. They're running backs.
that's a little dark right there. They might all be dinged up. They might all be not as good as they are right now. Well, we'll say that. Yeah, I'll go Saquon Barkley as well. Who is your pick to win the rushing title in 2018?
That gets into opportunity as much as anything. And examples, Todd Gurley would have won it last year, but he had to sit out the last game because he'd clinched everything. So I'll go Ezekiel Elliott. Who do you have?
I was going to go Ezekiel Elliott, but I'll go David Johnson just for the sake of picking someone different.
And who's your not dead running back in 5 years?
I pick Saquon. I would, if I was going to hot take it, I'd say that the dark horse is Joe Mixon, but we'll see about that. who is the most undervalued back in football?
Ooh, it's a good one.
It's a vague one.
It is a vague one, which maybe it makes it a bad one now. It's a hard, because here I am pausing, having to go through and think about it more. The most undervalued.
I was going to say, while you think about it, I'll throw out Carlos Hyde just because, I mean, gosh, the Browns sign him and they immediately go and draft his replacement, seemingly, with a top 40 pick. So not a whole lot of respect for Carlos Hyde, who's a quality back and probably, we both had him in the top 15 at the end of our top 15s, but
yeah,
pretty underappreciated there.
I would agree with you. When you ask this question, most undervalued, I think, all right, which running back impacts the game in ways that don't show up in touches necessarily? Because anymore, people value running backs appropriately because everybody plays fantasy football. So who impacts the game without touching the ball? But your point about Hyde is hard to overlook because the Browns, second, third round that they went, a second round, wasn't it, that they went running back in this draft? To me, that was one, and I don't know much about who they're picking, of course, but conceptually, I thought that was one of the worst picks in the draft because Hyde is a guy you sign and give the ball 18 times a game, and he's going to be better on 18 touches than he is on 7 or 8. He's going to be better per touch on 18 than he is on 7 or 8, and I think he's worthy of that. He's a good outside runner. He has just enough juice to get to the perimeter, and he always fully accomplishes whatever the context of the play calls for. So I'm with you. Carlos Hyde's going to rush for 350 yards this year because he's going to get wedged out and everyone's going to think, oh, that's not him. He's washed up. He isn't anything.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be fair because we shouldn't even be saying he can still play. He's just now in the prime of his career.
Yeah. Kind of along the same lines here. Best free agent fit of the 2018 signees who joined a new team: Hyde, Isaiah Crowell, Deion Lewis, Jerick McKinnon.
I like Lewis as he, remember how good he was in the passing game before James White took over in New England. So he'll give them that James White flex out ability. I'm sure they'll get him the ball in some screens. Matt LaFleur, their offensive coordinator there, just came from Los Angeles, and he saw what they did with Todd Gurley and how well-designed that screen game was. So I like Lewis because he can answer the bell and all of that, and he's also a very good traditional runner, even though he looks like a scat back. But my answer to your question, Gary, is going to be Jerick McKinnon, who I was surprised he got paid as much as he did in free agency. But when you look at the teams who were bidding on him and where he lands, San Francisco, McKinnon, it was a backup in Minnesota. He'll be immensely valuable in San Fran with Shanahan's offense because of, look at how Shanahan used Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman. It's as simple as that. Shanahan needs a receiving back to make his offense go because of all the stuff they do out of empty formations and the way they get the ball out in the quick game. And they know McKinnon's a sure thing there. Theoretically, he's proven himself, so they're going to go with him instead of Joe Williams, who they picked in the fourth round last year to fill this role, and Williams got hurt and didn't play as a rookie. They paid a premium to get a sure thing conceptually at that spot. I like the logic behind it.
Yeah, I liked all four signings. I loved those two signings, though. I think people forgot Deion Lewis can catch the ball pretty well, too, because he's just been overshadowed by James White. Free agency 2019, David Johnson and Tevin Coleman set to hit the market right now. Do you think they change teams? Do you think they break the bank? Or do you think we're looking at another relatively soft market for running backs?
I don't see the Cardinals letting David Johnson get. Do you? David Johnson.
No, I think he gets tagged if they don't figure something out.
Yeah, especially with their quarterback, they don't. Even though I know they've got Rosen and Bradford, they don't technically know what they're going to have at QB in 2019. The Falcons, they can be pretty sure what they have. That's why they just paid $100 million at their quarterback situation. Plus, the Falcons have Devontae Freeman, so I think Coleman is much likelier to hit the market. You give up two first-round picks for a franchise tag guy, right, Gary? That's still the rule. I was wondering if either of these guys are, like, is Coleman valuable enough to tag and see if someone will trade? No one's going to give up two first-rounders for him. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I think Coleman's going to get away. But last question here, will we ever see another running back win MVP?
Yeah, we will. Don't you think? Do you think they should separate those awards? Like, just make the quarterback its own award and then do an MVP, and then it can be between offense and defensive guys, too?
Yeah, I mean, look, when we did our staff awards last year, we split up. We just said offensive player of the year is best non-quarterback. So I think that, you just do it that way.
And that's how people treat it. But there's something to be said for – it's such a unique sport that the value is so inherently more for quarterbacks that if they called it the Joe Namath Award or whatever, whoever, and just made that QBs like they do in college with some of these awards, and then said most valuable, you'd get – better football conversation and you'd reward better football. Like J.J. Watt a few years ago, he should have been in the MVP discussion, but he doesn't play quarterback, so he wasn't.
Yeah.
And Antonio Brown should have been in it last year, but he doesn't play quarterback, so you can't logically make the argument. You tie the voters' hands by keeping quarterbacks in the class with everyone else. Should have a quarterback award and an MVP award, and then you really get people thinking football and looking at the whole game.
I agree. Yeah, and I think we will see a running back win MVP, but probably not deservedly so because of the reasons we've talked about.
Right. That's the problem, too. If he wins it, we're going to say he didn't deserve it because he doesn't play a valuable enough position. And we'll be right when we say that. And it's unfair that a guy will win an MVP and that's going to be part of the conversation. Is he was the most valuable player in the league, and he really wasn't that valuable. That's what people will have to say.
I agree. That's how it's going to play out. Just takes a down year for quarterbacks. That's a show. Let us know what you thought of that show. We did it differently than we did it in past years. Let us know. Talkback@themmqb.com. Andy_Benoit, GGremling_SI on Twitter. We're both on Facebook. Give us some feedback or send mailbag questions. We'll do mailbags sporadically over the course of the offseason. But that's going to do it for now. Thanks, as always, to producer Shelby Royston, the guys at Cadence 13 who always make us sound so good. Thanks to our sponsor this week, Buffalo Wild Wings. Get that $30 plus gift card and get the free $5 gift card. Support them the way they support our show. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB 10 Things podcast. You really are the best. We really want to know what you thought of these shows, because if you all hated it, we might do something different going forward this offseason, but we kind of like what we did today. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer, the MMQB podcast with Peter King, and this podcast, the MMQB 10 Things podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys next week.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.